But you know, yesterday there was this post by the Deputy Attorney General, Justice Ramsay, on Facebook. It says yesterday the High Court ordered the Honorable Attorney General to take over all the cases which the Office of the Special Prosecutor is prosecuting until such a time that the OSP obtains the constitutionally required authorization to prosecute. The order was given in the case brought by accused person one Peter Archibald Hyde, who was being prosecuted by the OSP. And it continues that, it says the Honorable Attorney General has no intention or capacity to disobey or ignore the High Court's order. Accordingly, the Office of the Attorney General will in the coming days begin to take the necessary steps to give effect to the court's order. We've been joined by the Deputy Attorney General, Justice Ramsay. Good morning and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Winston. It's been a while.
Indeed, it has been, and I believe you're doing very well. So you indicate the Attorney General will in the coming days begin to take the necessary steps to give effect to the court's order. Have you begun those necessary steps?
Thank you very much, Winston. Let me first give a background to this whole issue so that the public who are entitled to know will not just know what is going on, but would also understand what is going on. And I think it's our duty as public office holders to take those steps to ensure that the people are aware of what is going on because of a lot of misinformation on this matter. First of all, we need to acknowledge that the role that the Office of the Special Prosecutor is intended to play in our democracy is a very important one. Let me just give you one reason why the Office of the Special Prosecutor is an important office.
Okay.
First of all, when you talk of corruption is a very complex, area of life. And to fight it, you need to really be dedicated to that fight. You need to be committed to it. And then you need the support of every institution of state and every civil society and everyone to be able to succeed in the fight against corruption. Now, the strength of the office, the strength of that office is the fact that it specializes only, in the area of corruption. So, for example, if you take the Attorney General's office, we conduct every aspect of like every crime we investigate and we prosecute for that. But the problem is that for us, we can still come out as a very effective institution. Even if we don't prosecute even one corruption case, you know why?
Tell me.
we can look good by prosecuting murder. We can look good by prosecuting armed robbers. We can look good by prosecuting all the other offenses. And we can justify our budget by doing all these other things except corruption. But in the case of the special prosecutor, they cannot succeed unless they succeed at fighting corruption. And that is why it is important that we all understand that no one in this administration, President Mahama's administration, is against the Office of the Special Prosecutor and the role that it is intended to play in our democracy. It's a very crucial role. And I can tell you that the President is committed 100% to ensuring that corruption is fought on all fronts. Having said that, there is another issue on the table, which is what I think this whole fight is about. It is not that the Office of the Special Prosecutor is not important, and I've made that point. What the issue is that citizens are beginning to raise concerns about the legitimacy and the constitutionality of the office. This concern is not new. From the very day that this Office of Special Prosecutor idea was mooted by the previous government, every lawyer that I have spoken to, every lawyer who understands constitutional law, knew from day one that the solution to this problem is a constitutional amendment. I don't know any lawyer, even as of today, I don't know any lawyer who honestly believes that to create an independent prosecutorial authority in Ghana, you just have to use an ordinary legislation to do that. So for me, the issue we are facing today is not even about a disagreement over the constitutionality of what has happened. Now, a citizen has brought a case in court. And this citizen is not, this is someone who is being prosecuted, okay, and says that, look, I will raise objection, what we call preliminary objection, to the power, the authority of the OSP to prosecute me. This is not the first time that such an objection has been raised. This objection, I can mention about at least 3 cases in the past where people who have been prosecuted have objected to the authority of the prosecutor and succeeded in quashing convictions and in stopping the prosecutors from prosecuting them. There's a case called Republic versus Mohammed Shafiq Hijazi. This was in 2019. What was the issue in that case? It is SEPs, you know SEPs, former SEPs.
Mm-hmm.
When SEPs was converted to GRE, SEPs used to prosecute with the authority of the Attorney General. Then when it was converted to GRE, they went on to prosecute just by change of name. I mean, by new legislation and change of name, the accused person challenged the legality of his prosecution and succeeded. Then there is ISA versus the Republic. There are cases, so this is not even a novel situation that someone who is being prosecuted will challenge the authority of the person prosecuting him and succeed. It is not even a novel situation. It has happened before in our jurisprudence. But the fact is that when I read the OSP Act, the Act itself says that you can prosecute upon the authority of the Attorney General.
Yeah.
So the accused person is saying, I want you to show me your authority, your authorization, for me to know whether you can prosecute me or not. And that is the accused person's right. If you were being prosecuted and you know of... Hello?
Yeah, I'm listening. Go ahead.
If you have been prosecuted and you know of any objection that you can raise to make sure that you are not prosecuted, are you going to say that because of the desire to fight corruption, you won't raise that objection? And if you raise that objection, are you going to accept the fact that because everybody loves the office that is prosecuting, look at SEPs' job is to collect taxes for Ghana. So are you going to say that because everybody loves the role that the institution is playing, you will accept to be prosecuted even though the person doesn't have authority?
Mm.
And so when the court held that the office of the special prosecutor was unable to provide evidence of their authorization, and because of that, the prosecution must end, and because of that, the office of the special prosecutor has no authority to be prosecuting people, the issue is not even about the court decision, because we all know that when a court decides a matter and you disagree, what you do is to appeal. And you have your right of appeal up to review level, up to Supreme Court, and even have a review, you know, opportunity if you have a strong case. That how does this convert into the narrative that there are people who don't want the special prosecutor's office to function?
Okay, now just on the side.
No, mm-hmm. Winston.
Yeah, go ahead.
Let me just. So. And today, we seem to be agreeing that rule of law is what should prevail. Okay. And in this case that I just narrated to you, the Office of Attorney General was not a party to the case. As a matter of fact, we didn't know of this case until it was decided. You understand?
Okay.
So, how does that become a fight between the Office of the Attorney General and the Office of the Special Prosecutor? We didn't ask anyone to go and commit a crime. We didn't ask OSP to arrest this person. We didn't ask OSP to go. We had no hand in OSP's prosecution of this person. In fact, I don't even know this person. You understand? So, how is it that we must be so powerful to be able to ask someone to go and commit a crime and got the OSP to arrest the person and put the person before court and for the person to raise his objection? And this objection was pending before we even filed our case. This objection was raised somewhere in January. Okay. And we published our opinion, our position on this matter just last week.
Okay. So, I mean...
That is the first side of the case. Now, the second one, the one aspect of the case in the Supreme Court. In the Supreme Court matter, there is a friend of mine, someone I trained, Noah Dante. He's been in my firm for some time. He since we got into office, and I think before that, he's someone who is in the habit of filing public interest cases. He already has about 3 cases against the Office of Attorney General. So he goes to court to see that the Office of the Special Prosecutor doesn't have any authority to be prosecuting. I mean, I'm just giving you the broad strokes. Mm-hmm. And that the act that established the Office of the Special Prosecutor, a section of it is unconstitutional. And the unconstitutionality or the question of constitutionality also hinges on the same issue of whether Parliament, could make an act to establish an independent, authority to prosecute without recourse to the Office of Attorney General. This case was filed somewhere last year. And let me tell you what happens at the Office of Attorney General when cases are filed before we take a decision on how to defend the case. In case of legislation like this, we go for the file that led to the original legislation. We review every comment on the file, and then we review the position of the law. And when we review the position of the law, we then go to the next stage of policy as to what policy would the law justify before we file our case. Now, when we publish our position also supports the fact that the Office of the Special Prosecutor should have been created by a constitutional amendment rather than by an ordinary legislation. This is not the first time that Attorney General has taken this position. We've been consistent in this position that whenever there is a provision of the Constitution and you want to alter it, the proper thing to do is to seek amendment of the Constitution and not to use a legislative or administrative measures to do it. It has been the consistent position of the Attorney General's office since time immemorial.
Okay.
It has also been the consistent position of the Supreme Court on that. Now, when you take this issue, from the very day that this legislation was mooted and discussed, it has always been on the table that you can't solve this problem or you can't achieve what you want to achieve without amending the Constitution. Indeed, the special prosecutor himself, when he was being vetted, made the same point. And I think every lawyer that I know has made the same point. So we put our position, which is consistent with precedents and everything out there. How is that an attempt to suppress or to destroy the Office of the Special Prosecutor?
Okay.
And let me make this very important point, Winston. Today we may be happy that we can allow or we will say that Parliament has the power to take a constitutional power and use ordinary legislation to allocate it to somebody else. Today, maybe we like the Office of the Special Prosecutor. We like the intent behind the office. We appreciate it. We want it to work. So we accept that. Tomorrow, but when you set a precedent in law, okay, mm-hmm. Law does not operate based on what you want today and what you want tomorrow. So tomorrow, what we are saying is that Parliament may take judicial power, okay, use ordinary legislation to allocate part of the judicial power to another institution and say that this institution can also adjudicate over matters. Are we going to court them to say that Parliament has no power to do so? So when we take this position, it is because of the essence of law. Law is intended to be as it is so that people cannot use their personal interest and desire to have their way. That is why we call it rule of law, not rule of man. Rule okay. of law means that all of us are under the law. So the fact that you like something, the fact that you want something done, as far as constitutional law is concerned, doesn't mean that you can use any means to do it. That is why we have what we call institutional limitation, procedural limitation, and substantive limitation in law. What it means is that when you give power to someone and you don't regulate.
At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $24.99 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
It's the power. The power will become, the person can misuse the power to abuse people. Okay. That is why we have what we call power corrupts and absolute power.
Just
corrupts, you know, absolutely. So if we ignore the limitations today, then we must be ready to accept the fact that now we are giving Parliament a free hand to do what they want to do at any point in time okay. and have it done.
Now, Justice, I'm sorry, quick question, because you start by saying it's important to let the public know and understand, and I'll take the no as knowledge. So based on that premise, it's important we also understand, because you make reference to SEBS, who had been giving authorization by the Attorney General to prosecute. That authorization, how is it done, briefly?
Okay, so what happens is the organization or the person, let me see, the person who wants to be authorized. So the institution will submit a list of persons that they want to be authorized. And then we issue executive instrument, or what we usually call a FIAC.
Okay.
The institutions that these persons can go and then prosecute on behalf of the Attorney General. So if you take Iyoko, for instance, it is not every lawyer in Iyoko who has the power to prosecute. The lawyers who have the power to prosecute in Iyoko are lawyers that come and release them in the EI and tell them that these persons are authorized to prosecute. And there's a criteria for even selecting the persons who are authorized to do so.
Okay. So if the OSP were to say, come to you and say they want authorization, that's something the Attorney General will grant them.
Why not? Why won't we grant them the authorization if they apply for it?
Now, in the same way, the Attorney General can also, because of the importance you attach to the Office of the Special Prosecutor, liaise with them and give them that authorization to prosecute corruption and corruption-related cases, right?
We have been liaising with the Office of the Special Prosecutor since we came to office. I mean, there are so many things that we have done, some of which I cannot put out there. So there's no issue about liaising or not liaising. We will always, why won't we? That's the question I am asking.
Is that not the more reason? And just a second, sorry, 1 minute. Mm-hmm. Is that not the more reason your statement on Facebook that since you cannot disobey the court's ruling, you're taking steps to take over their cases, when what you can actually do is to now give them the authorization to continue with their prosecutions?
I think you missed the point. You missed the whole point of this issue. You have completely missed it. Have you ever listened to the debate is not whether OSP is not interested in coming for the authorization, and it's because the OSP says that it is independent and doesn't require the authorization. That is the issue at the center of it. It's not about why you think if OSP wants to come for the authorization, what does it take? It's a letter you write to us. So the fact that they are not doing it should even prompt you to know that the issue is bigger than coming for authorization. The whole argument is the independence of the special prosecutor, which is at the core of this issue. So if you simplify the matter and insist that it's just about giving authorization and not giving it, then you probably have completely left the issue aside and you're addressing a completely different issue.
Great. So if the OSP admits that they need the authorization, you don't have a problem?
We have never had any problem with the fact that there should be an independent, I mean, a special prosecutor who will prosecute corruption and corruption-related cases. We have never had an issue. And I don't think, look, President Mahama has said this when he was campaigning. It has been the policy of the NDC during our, it's part of our manifesto, that we have no intention, we think that the Office of the Special Prosecutor is an important one. It's an essential office that should stand in this country. The mandate is very, very, very important to our democracy. That is not to say that because something is important, then you can do it anyhow. Especially when citizens are invoking the jurisdiction of a court and issues of legality and constitutionality are raised, you cannot use your wish and desire to subvert a constitutional or a legal arrangement. Otherwise, then we are no more under rule of law, we are under rule of man. And today, maybe the outcome is something that we like. But when you set the precedent, tomorrow, the outcome may not be something that you like. And I've already given you an example where, when we accept this, then we should be ready that tomorrow, Parliament can use ordinary legislation to take other powers and give to people that persons or other authorities that they want without following the prescribed procedures of the Constitution. And when that happens, then all of us are exposed. And we cannot, at that point, be saying that we believe in rule of law or that we believe in the Constitution.
Okay. Now, someone sends me a question that says, Justice Remsai was on the CSO panel during the deliberations to find a legitimate way to get an OSP Act so we can prosecute political corruption independent of the AG. What was his position then?
My position has been this position, and it has been the position of the law since then. Our position is that to be able to create an independent prosecutor, we need to amend Article 18. It has always been, look, it has always been my position, it has always been the position of the NDC, it has been the position of all the lawyers that I know who understand law and appreciate constitutional law. I don't know any lawyer, to be honest with you, who understands constitutional law, who thinks that this can be done by a legislation. And yesterday, I'm sure I had a chance to listen to, I mean, I went on your social media platform and I saw videos of eminent lawyers. I've seen the former Attorney General, Ayuk Rotu. I have heard the former Deputy Attorney General, Temka. I've heard the former Speaker of Parliament. I have heard, and before that I've heard so many, it's something that we have discussed extensively before, and so there's no dispute over this issue as to what is constitutional and what is not constitutional and how to create an independent, you know, prosecutor.
Great. So, yes, my colleague Kwatanti has a quick question for you.
Yeah, Justice, I mean, there are those who would say that implicit in the process that leads to the approval and appointment of the special prosecutor is the authorization. So we have a special prosecutor that is nominated by the Attorney General, that is appointed by the President. He is vetted by the Parliament of Ghana and approved and sworn in. When the Attorney General is nominating someone with a special prosecutor, he's nominating the person to go and prosecute. So there are those who will argue, and I've seen Ace Ankoma makes a lengthy post on Facebook this morning explaining that perhaps if you look at the process leading to the appointment and the law itself, that authorization is implicit in the act and is implicit in the appointment process of the Attorney General. I wonder how you respond to that.
Thank you for this question. That is to say that, one, anything that a public official does is constitutional and cannot be challenged. If the argument is that because the Attorney General has done all this and therefore it can be construed as approval or authorization, so no one can question it. It is to say that anything any public official does is correct and cannot be questioned. Parliament has made laws that have been struck down as unconstitutional. Presidents have taken a decision at the highest level of cabinet and have been struck down as unconstitutional. Look, COVID-19 law, and I conducted that case myself when I was a private practitioner. The president made a law which said that because of the COVID situation, we should those restrictions, impose restrictions on citizens to save life. When we challenged it, the Supreme Court said that to save life is important. However, the Constitution has a procedure for saving lives. So, under these circumstances, so if the president indeed wants to save lives, he should go in accordance with that provision, the steps that the Constitution has provided. And the court made a profound statement. He said, if we allow for the sake of what we think good today, and we sidestep the law and achieve it, tomorrow we are creating a room for people to sidestep the law, to do what is bad. And that the reason why there's a law, or there's law, is for us to protect ourselves with our respect to human and with our respect to personal desires. How is this not sensible? And I think it's a very sensible thing that everybody who understands the essence of law would accept, that the fact that we say you can do this doesn't mean that you can do it anyhow. So that argument, I don't know what it's intended to achieve, but in any case, how does the Attorney General's compliance with the law, okay? Parliament made a law and says the Attorney General should do X, Y, Z, should appoint somebody, should nominate somebody. The Attorney General complies with the law to have that done. How is that an immunity to question of constitutionality? So what kind of argument is that?
Then, Justice, I want to know also, in your post, you are specific that you are taking steps to take over all the cases. How are you going to do that, and when are you doing that?
Okay, so as I indicated, I said in the coming days, so we are, since the decision was given and since we got a copy of the decision, we have been having meetings with our officials and we've been taking, planning what to do. And I think that's why I said in the coming days, we'll announce to the public the steps that we are putting in place to ensure that the court, you know, the court's order is given effect to. And to assure the public, let me give this assurance to the general public. Issues of this nature, okay, requires persons who have deep public interest at heart. People who have the mentality to achieve what is right. And we are going to balance every possible interest to ensure that any step that we take to comply with the court decision is taken in the best interest of the people. It is taken with respect to the human rights of the people who are being prosecuted, who have been prosecuted. And so it is not something that I can sit here and then say that we are going to do X, Y, Z, because we are making sure that we take the decision that is perfect, a decision that would satisfy every possible interest and reconcile all the difficulties that we have had, including consultation with the Office of the Special Prosecutor, and even their staff and all the things that are concerned in this matter. We are going to make sure that we have all that and get it right.
Mm. Quick one. And so, you know, Kwaku Asante was raising the question about the legislation. And someone just said, so the AG issued legislative instrument, that's LI-2374, which explicitly empowered the OSP to decide whether or not to prosecute after investigations. And that says, based on this, what other authorization would be needed by the OSP?
I think we are missing the issue. I've addressed the authorization issue, that the issue at stake is really not whether AG wants to authorize or AG doesn't want to authorize. That is not the issue at stake. The issue at stake is whether the OSP requires AG's authorization. I don't know if you get the difference.
Yes, I get it. Go ahead.
So if you ask me whether AG has authorized him or has implicitly authorized the office and all that, what is at stake is whether the authorization itself is required, not whether how it was given.
So talking about whether the authorization is required, there are those who say based on the legislation, the authorization has actually been given, and thus would not be required again because it has been given.
Winston.
Justice.
Let me just break it down. So the purpose of setting up the OSP is to make it independent of the Attorney General. Is that not the purpose?
Yes. independent.
If that is the purpose,
independent
of the Attorney General,
independent
of the Attorney General. Hello.
I'm listening. Go ahead.
No, I want us to go because I've
yes,
said
and I've said
times,
yes, it's to make it independent of the Attorney General.
That is understood.
Yes.
So the purpose is to ensure that the Office of the Special Prosecutor is independent of the Attorney General. That is the goal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you are going to be independent of someone, do you need the person's authorization? The answer is no. Because anyone who gives you authorization has the power to also withhold or withdraw the authorization. And the authorization we are referring to comes with so many conditions. It doesn't mean that we give you AG doesn't give you the authorization and then allows you to do, and then you can do whatever you like. And here, I'm not even talking of a particular attorney general, I'm talking of the institution. So for example, if you ask someone, okay, to drive your car, you give authorization to someone to drive your car, the driver cannot do as he wishes. So the core issue in this conversation is whether the OSP requires the authorization in the first place. Well, you think that, you take look, the current OSP, he was my lecturer, a very intelligent man. You think he doesn't know that he can write a letter and be given authorization? He knows, and it's so easy to do that. But the fact that he has not done it or is not interested in doing it should tell you that the issue is not about whether the authorization will be given or will not be given. It is about whether it is even required in the first place. To be independent,
At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $2,499 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.
Need authorization of the Attorney General. So that is the issue at the center of this conversation.
Okay.
So, Justice, the subject matter that led to this decision by the High Court judge was the quo warranto application that had been made. And this is a High Court judge seized with a single matter. As the Deputy Attorney General, as someone that has prosecuted so many cases, done a lot of constitutional issues like you said, and we all know about that. Do you think the High Court judge had jurisdiction and had the power to make some of the orders he had made, not limited to the specifics of the case before him, but in a way that almost goes to the heart of the question that is currently before the Supreme Court on whether or not the OSP has prosecutorial powers that is independent of the power you and Dr. Dominic Ayene exercised at the Attorney General's Department?
So let me give you the answer. Is first, it depends. A High Court ordinarily faced with an application on a particular matter will make orders to affect that particular matter. But when the particular matter is a question of someone's public authority and that question has been answered, it goes to the public authority's foundation, not the accused person. So the question before the court is whether you have authority to conduct prosecution. And you are given an opportunity to show that you have the authority to conduct prosecution. And the court found out that you were not able to show that you have authority to prosecute. What other order should the court make? That your lack of authority to prosecute is only in respect of this person. But when it comes to another person, even though you still don't have the authority, you will go and prosecute that person.
Sir, but because this was just a single matter, the authorization to be shown had to do with this particular matter. I'm not sure Justice Nyante was aware whether or not the OSP has authorization in any of the other cases he's prosecuting. It was limited to this particular case before him. And so there are those who suggest strongly that he had to make orders that bordered on the specifics of the issue before him and not go to make orders that actually almost pronounces on what some will say the constitutionality or otherwise of the OSP acts and all of that. But quo warranto application.
No, I understand your question. Are you done?
Please, you may answer the question.
Yeah. It looks like I'm not able to communicate properly, because I've told you that the question before the court is whether the OSP has a fiat to prosecute at all. The court found that the OSP did not have authorization to prosecute at all. So you want the court to say that even though you don't have authorization to prosecute at all, you can prosecute some other people, but you can't prosecute this person before me. In other words, you expect that even though the finding is that there's no authorization at all, every other accused person should go and then file a different case for the court to go through and come to the same conclusion, and for the court to come to the same conclusion. So the issue of having decided a case which doesn't apply to another case depends on the nature of the inquiry before the court. It is not a general rule that when a court is making a decision in respect of one person, and then he cannot make the decision will not go and affect the other person. If the question is about the person's authority and the finding is that he doesn't have the authority, on what basis would the court say that go and prosecute other people? Do you get the point I'm making?
I get the point.
So there's no general rule that when someone brings a case in a public law, you see, it's not every lawyer who is a public law expert, okay? Public law is a special part of law which requires special training and special, appreciation of issues than private law. So when these principles come under discussion, I expect that people will make pronouncements or explanations that do not really reflect the position of the law. But I think when the explanation is given and is understood, or unless it's not understood, we cannot keep repeating something that has been explained and which I believe is understood. If the president dismisses Mr. E, okay, from office on grounds that the person belongs to NPP, right, and the person challenges the issue in court, and the court holds that the president cannot dismiss anybody on grounds of the person's political affiliation, you are saying that that pronouncement by the court, because it's between the president and Mr. A, now the president can go ahead and be dismissing other people on the same grounds that the court said he cannot do? Is that a proposition?
Justice, we get that, we are trying to get your explanations and your understanding so that all of us are on the same page of this. So that is what we are doing. We are questioning.
No, I understand, but I'm actually not speaking to you. Mm. I'm actually not speaking to you directly. I'm speaking to the persons who are holding this view, some of whom I know, and I know they understand or ought to understand this thing, but who stand for whatever reason, either do not appreciate it or are not willing to appreciate it. That is the what I'm speaking to, not necessarily you in the studio. So forgive me if I sound as if I'm coming after you. No, not you at all. Because I know you are reflecting other people's views. The question, you already informed me that is a question that someone or some people are asking. So it is not you that the question did not come from you.
Okay. Well, Justice Remsai, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning. We're grateful to you. Anything you want to say finally?
I just want to assure the public that this government understands the essence and the importance of the Office of the Special Prosecutor. We have no intention or desire to shut down the Office of the Special Prosecutor unnecessarily. What this government, like any other government, has a duty to do, and we at the Office of the Attorney General, our job is to advise on position of law and pursue the enforcement of the Constitution and every other law. Even the pursuit of that, we have to take a step back and do things properly to ensure sustainability. That is what we have to do. And if we really want the Office of the Special Prosecutor to stay, we should do things right from the beginning. We should do things that are sustainable, not things that are meant to just satisfy a temporary desire and score a temporary point and say that we have done it when we know deep down our hearts that it has not been done and has not been done properly. We will take every step to ensure that things that ought to be done are done while we still continue with the fight against corruption. Thank you very much, and thank you for giving me the opportunity this morning to explain.
Yes, but just by way of clarification, because you make your final point, I just would want to do this. Do you think we need the office of the special prosecutor?
We need it.
All right. Thank you very much, Justice Sremsai, Deputy Attorney General, for joining us.
At Byers Volkswagen, we've been family-owned since 1897, built on trust, driven by innovation. And now, buying your next Volkswagen is easier than ever. Shop online, customize your deal, and finalize everything from home. Just stop by to pick up the keys. It's that simple.
Drive home a new 2026 Volkswagen Tiguan S for $286 for 36 months with $24.99 due at signing.
The next generation shops online, and we're driving with them at ColumbusVolkswagen.com or visit us by the airport.
See dealer for details. Offer ends 4/30/2026.